Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming to learn together once again in our series of Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversary. So this month, where we're going, good morning, Rabbi Muskin. So nice to see you. This month, we're going to discuss Rav Moshe Stern. Who was Rav Moshe Stern? He was known as the Debrecener Rav. He was the author of a sefer called Be'er Moshe, 8 volumes of Shilas and Tshuvas called Be'er Moshe. I remember when we first got married, there was a farm store down the block from our apartment, which was very dangerous, and one of the first svarim I bought in that svarim store was this 8-volume tshuva sefer called Be'er Moshe, and I found it very fascinating. I was always fascinated by who this person was, so now we'll talk a little bit about it. And many tshuvas in the sefer, he disagrees with Rav Moshe Feinstein, so I thought it would be a good addition to this series. So a little bit of biography, a little bit of background, and it's always also good to talk a little bit about a Holocaust survivor who rebuilt a community on the heels of Yom HaShoah. So the Debrecener Rav is a classic Hungarian Rav. He was born in 1914, a staunch follower of the Chasam Sofer. He actually married a great-granddaughter of the Chasam Sofer, but before that already, he was a serious follower of the Chasam Sofer. He had 4 brothers who were all known growing up in their Hungarian town as the Iluyisha Stern boys. They were all Iluyim, only he and one other brother survived. His older brother of Bezalel became a Rav in Melbourne, Australia, and then in Vienna at the end of his life, and then in Eretz Yisrael at the very end of his life. And he is the author of another Shailas Tshuvas Sefer that we also could have included in this series, called Shailas Tshuvas Bitzel HaChachma. And the Debrecener Rav always refers to his older brother with the greatest reverence and respect. And when you think about what was lost in the Holocaust, you look at a family where there were 5 boys, and they were all known to be great Iluyim, and only 2 of them survived. And the 2 that survived were great rabbinic leaders who wrote important tshuva svarim that are quoted all over the place nowadays. And you think about, and what would the other 3 have been? And what would so many others have been had they been given a chance to survive? The Debrecener Rav himself was a Talmud primarily of his father, Rav Avram Stern, who was a dayan in a city called Neuhausel, which is now a Slovakian town that borders Hungary, and also a Talmud of his maternal grandfather, Rav Yosef Meir Tigerman, who was the Rav in that town of Neuhausel. And they were both killed together. His father and his grandfather were killed together in Auschwitz after eyewitnesses said that they spent a 3-day cattle car journey to Auschwitz learning the laws of dying al Kiddush Hashem and discussing which nusach of a bracha they're going to recite when they have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of being Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. He also was a Talmud, the Debrecener Rav was a Talmud of the Das Sofer, a great grandson of the Chasam Sofer, and in the Yeshiva Gedola in Preshburg. As a yeshiva boy, his friends would recall that he would wake up at 3 a.m. to learn. He was extremely diligent, but he didn't want to disturb his roommates too much, so he had his 3 a.m. chavrusa wake him up by pulling at a string that extended from his leg out the window. So imagine waking up that day by feeling someone yanking on a string that's attached to your leg, and that's how he would wake up each morning at 3 a.m. He then married the granddaughter of the previous Debrecener Rav, Rav Shlomo Tzvi Strasser, and he moved to Debrecen, where he had, which is a Hungarian town, and as a young married couple, and he had a son and a daughter. He was appointed a dayan in Debrecen. The daughter died in childhood before the war, and then during the war years, the Nazis invaded Hungary much later than Poland. It was in 1944 when the Hungarians were invaded, and as a dayan, he dealt with some of the most dreadful shailas, and he actually recorded them, but he never had the heart to publish them. He couldn't bring himself to publish them for whatever reason. The Hungarian fascists helped the Nazis round up Jews from villages, and they transported them to Debrecen, and at that time, he met a Talmud Chacham who had a Gemara Tainis and a Sefer Gvura Sari from one of the neighboring towns. Gvura Sari was the Sefer that the Shagas Aryeh wrote on certain Masechtas and Shas, and the Debrecener Rav to that point in his life had never seen the Sefer Gvura Sari, and he was shocked that the Shagas Aryeh would write a Sefer on such an easy Masechta, Maseches Tainis. But then he opened it up and he started reading from the Gvura Sari, and he was astounded by the genius of the Shagas Aryeh, and he decided it's appropriate anyway to learn Maseches Tainis, because he said at that time in our lives we were being makabel many ta'anios. We were fasting a lot because of all of the tzaros that was going on. That was how we were mitspalel by being makabel many fasts. So we also learned Maseches Tainis with the Sefer Gevuras Ari. In fact, when he was forced to leave, he was up to Daf Yud Ches, which he took as a sign of Chai that he was going to survive. But when he left, he obviously couldn't bring any of his Svarim with him, and the last Svarim that he left on his table in his apartment in Debrecen were the Gemara Tainis with the Gevuras Ari on the table. So we always felt that he had abandoned, in a certain sense, the Gevuras Ari, that Sefer Gevuras Ari. And therefore, while he was in Bergen-Belsen, he made a neder to himself that if he were to survive, he's going to reprint the Sefer Gevuras Ari with his own Ha'aros on it. And he did, he survived, and he reprinted the Gevuras Ari with his own Ha'aros on it. But miraculously, beyond that, he went back after the war to Debrecen, and he somehow found his Svarim. They were boxed up somewhere. First box he opens up, the Gevuras Ari was right on top. He actually recovered that Sefer Gevuras Ari after the war was over. His family was transferred to Budapest. His wife and young son were hidden in Budapest during the war. He was sent to Bergen-Belsen, but somehow he managed to sneak his Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin through during his time in Bergen-Belsen. Post-war, he traveled back to Budapest and reunited with his wife and child. Then he went to Debrecen to rebuild. And even though the Debreciner Rav, the original Debreciner Rav, the grandfather of his wife's grandfather, was saved, but he was saved on the Kastner train and he had emigrated to Eretz Yisrael. So now they needed a new Debreciner Rav if they were going to build the Debrecen community after the war. So Rav Moshe Stern became the Debreciner Rav after the war. I always thought they called him the Debreciner Rav because that must have been his position before the war. No, he was a dayan in Debrecen before the war. After the war, he tried to rebuild the community in Debrecen. It didn't work out because the Hungarian parliament in 1949 passed a new constitution that made it very clear that it was going to be impossible to rebuild the Jewish community there. So Rav Michel Ber Weissmandel and Rav Shlomo Moshe Unger secured him visas to come to America. For a short time, he was a Rav in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, but ultimately he settled in Borough Park, and that's where he stayed for the rest of his life. He built a shul called Kahal Yesodei HaTorah for those Hungarian followers of the Chassam Sofer. He personally was not Hasidish, but he wore the Hasidish Levush on Shabbos, and he encouraged his Mispalalim to lean toward Hasidus. And he stayed in Borough Park even during the summertime. I don't know if you've ever been to Borough Park. If you go to Borough Park on any other time of the year, every car is triple parked. You can't get anywhere. It's jam-packed. You go to Borough Park in July, you could like race down the streets. They're like empty. There's nothing, no one there. Everyone goes up to the Catskill Mountains. Everyone's gone. He would stay over the summer because he felt that you cannot leave a community without a posek. And there must be some Jews that are there and they need a posek also. So he stayed, he would stay even during the summer. He had relationships with many Gedolei Torah. He had a relationship with Rav Vadi Yosef, with Rav Aaron Cutler. He was extremely close with the Satmar Rebbe. He was also close with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. In fact, when he visited the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1990, the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked him to write a tshuva paskening that the Geula should come. That he figured that if the Debreciner Rav were to write a tshuva, then Mashiach can't wait anymore. And the Rebbe gave him a bracha that when that comes true, he should be appointed to the Sanhedrin. The Satmar Rav is the one who suggested that he start supervising kashrus as a way to make a little more money because he didn't have too much money. So he started supervising kashrus and he started with the supervision of Klein's ice cream. And they paid him at least partially at first in ice cream. They paid him for the shkacha. So all the children in Borough Park knew that if you walk by the Debreciner Rav's house, the Debreciner Rebbetzin would chase after you and give you ice cream because there's only so much ice cream that the Debreciner Rav himself was able to eat. So they used to take care of all the children in the neighborhood with the ice cream. Now the Sefer Be'er Moshe itself, in his introduction, he describes how he wanted to publish the Sefer much earlier, but he was consumed with dealing with his son's illness. He apparently had a son who was a big tzaddik and went through a horrific illness and ultimately succumbed to the illness. And he describes what a tzaddik his son was and how he was mekabel yisurin ba'ava. And he said that the Sefer Noam Elimelech was always under his son's pillow. This is like a skulak kind of thing, when his son was sick, and in his final illness, when he fainted for the final time, and he was sent to the hospital, the Debrett Zion Rav said he looked all over and he couldn't find the Sefer Noam Elimelech, and the son died soon after on the Noam Elimelech's yard site. And he said when he came home from the hospital after his son died, he saw on the shelf right there in front of him was the Sefer Noam Elimelech. He doesn't know why he couldn't find it when the time came. Fascinating story. He expresses great pride in his kihila because he says they're all Hungarian. Ein anu tzrichen lilmot Torah v'derech Hashem migdolim yotzei medinos acheros. He said we don't have to learn from people who come from other places. We get to learn from the purebred Hungarians, especially considering the Ashkafic divide between Hungarian Jewry and others. And he decried how people think that this is all Nakdama, that people think that the United Nations decides the fate of the Jewish people. And he says the reality is lo anu tuluyim b'da'atam, our fate is not determined by them. Elohim tuluyim b'ma'aseinu atovim klapei Hashem b'taraso. We determine our own fate and the fate of the world by how we observe Torah and mitzvos. Lo hayu en machria elachayenu bebeis hamedrash bebateinu bechutzos machria das hayu en kilev melachim v'sarim biyad Hashem. The UN doesn't decide what's going to happen to the Jewish people. We decide what's going to what the UN decisions are going to be by how we behave, not only in the beis medrash but out in the marketplace and how we act as Jews. In his introduction to Chelek Zayin, there are a total of eight volumes. In his introduction to Chelek Zayin, he says that he intends to write a detailed account of his experience in the Holocaust, but he says Chelek Ches is already about to go to print, so he can't include it in Chelek Ches. He plans on including it in Chelek Tes, in the ninth volume of Shalos and Tshuvas. Sadly, there never was a ninth volume of Shalos and Tshuvas, and I don't think we ever got his detailed account of what he went through in the Holocaust. In his instruction to Chelek Zayin, he also decries the dishonesty in the younger generation, that too many people are cheating in business and are taking shortcuts. And he says nobody's giving Musar because there are political reasons why every rabbi thinks that they can't give Musar. And he has such a line. He was a very sharp-tongued person. You get the impression from reading his shuvas. He says, Kama pam shamati mi pekodosh adoni avi mori v'rabi agon atzadik hacharif ubaki yotzum zatzal Hashem yukam domo. He said, I heard so many times from my father, Mishmei da Hamalbim, in the name of the Malbim, Sheshem Hapalitik Nolad, Shabavonoseno Arabim Hachanufa Imashaker, Nizdavgu Ze Imze, Vinolad Mehem Balmum Gadol Sheshmo Politik. He says, politics came when two people, when false flattery and sheker and falsehood got married to each other and had an illegitimate child called politics. So that's what the Debrett Zion Rav thought about politics. He was not a big fan of politics. His style in his tshuvas is a very easy style. It's unlike Minchas Yitzchak, which we discussed a while ago, who Dafka wanted his farm to be difficult. The Be'er Moshe, the Debrett Zion Rav, wanted to make it as understandable as possible. So the way he did it was he started each tshuva with the basic shaila that was asked, then a two-line, very brief, concise, halachic answer to that shaila, followed by the full analysis, followed by what he calls Peros Hanoshrim, a summary of the whole tshuva. And he was very machmir on social issues, but not so machmir on ritual law. He was a pretty straight posek when it came to ritual law. He didn't like unnecessary chumras, but on social issues, you know, he was a Hungarian. You know, he was not a big fan of the modern Orthodox. Let's put it that way. He was a different style. In fact, he has some tshuvas where he writes very, very strongly against our community, our Rebbeim, our Kashrus. You know, he writes in Chelek Ches Siman Gimel Oz Gimel that he says, Mi sheyilmod mi sefer shemachabra rosh yeshiva be'eze yeshivas university v'yir rov b'kiyusa b'tori. He says, I can imagine someone is going to buy a sefer from someone who's a rosh yeshiva in yeshiva university, and they're going to say, this guy's a genius, he knows all of Torah. He says, don't be fooled. You're going to then start to think that you're allowed to teach in yeshiva university. And then you're going to start to think that you're and you don't know all kinds of trefa hashkafas that are being stuck into those svarim. So don't be taken by these great talmidei chachamim that teach in yeshiva university. Okay, he has similar things to say about Zionists and every member of the Mizrahi. He has similar things to say about the OU hashkacha. He says the rabbis of the OU wear short jackets and they have kol minei magazinim besoch besam. They have magazines in their homes. You can't trust their hashkacha. He was a Riff, you know, very very right-wing, you know, sharp person. So anyway, As far as his disagreements with Rav Moshe, he disagreed with Rav Moshe on just about everything. Oh, one more thing about his tshuvas. He wrote something called Kuntras Electric, which is a series of dozens and dozens of tshuvas about technology. He was, for all of his traditionalism, he was very good about trying to understand all of the modern technology of the time and how halacha applies to it. So he has tshuvas about everything, every appliance that you could find in your house, at least through the 1980s. Toaster ovens, air conditioners, tape recorders, refrigerators, and how the halacha plays out in Hilchas Shabbos and in all other areas of halacha as far as modern appliances go. So he called that Kuntras Electric. So whenever it comes to something that relates to a modern appliance, he normally is quoted by a lot of the later poskim, a lot of the Likud Svarim, the collections of who writes on the topic. He always has something to say on the topic. He spent a lot of time discussing with professionals about the way these things work. Now, he did have many, many disagreements with Rav Moshe. I'll just highlight a couple of them, and then we'll get to the one tshuva that I wanted to highlight. So first of all, there are too many to count. Meaning, he quotes Rav Moshe all the time. He's always quoting the Rav Moshe. He had great respect for Rav Moshe, but he disagreed with him all the time. He came from a totally different tradition than Rav Moshe came from. So Rav Moshe never quotes him, not once in the entire Rigros Moshe, but again, that is no surprise. Rav Moshe never quoted any of his contemporaries. He was always quoting Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Nadi Biyuda and the Chasam Sofer. He was not quoting people who lived in his time. Rav Moshe was very limited in the Mar Makomos that he would quote. He would quote the more traditional Mar Makomos, not contemporary Svarim. But I'll just give you a sampling of some of the things that the Debre Tziner and Rav Moshe disagreed about. Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe or Chaim Chelek Alef Sim Kuf Chav Tes that if someone has a temperature, is running a temperature of 102 degrees Fahrenheit, that's enough to be Mechal Shabbos for the person. The Debre Tziner and Chelek Vav Sim and Zayin disagrees. He says, Heim Dvarim She'i Efshar Lekablam V'chalila Lahakel Bazeh Kulehai. He says, you can't possibly treat that as a Cholash Yesh B'Sakana, that you're going to be Mechal Shabbos for someone just because they're running 102 temperature. Rav Moshe and Archaim Chel Gimel Simulam Tess says that paper cups cannot be used for Kiddush. Debre Tziner in Chelik Hei Simen Membeis says that Dvarav Ma'od Tamuim. He says, I don't understand at all why Rav Moshe thinks you're not allowed to use paper cups for Kiddush. Because you're not allowed to use a broken cup for Kiddush. What does a paper cup have to do with a broken cup? A paper cup is functioning perfectly fine. So he disagrees with Rav Moshe on that. Rav Moshe and Archaim Chel Gimel Simen Ayin Zayin says that if a Ben Chutz La'aretz is in Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov Sheni, so clearly you have to keep 2 days of Yom Tov, says Rav Moshe, but what if there's a Levaya on what would be Yom Tov Sheni? Are you allowed to go to the funeral? So normally we wouldn't make a funeral with Hespedim, certainly not on Yom Tov Sheni. So even though we make Radin, we would bury someone on Yom Tov Sheni, but we don't do Hespedim on Yom Tov Sheni. So are you allowed to go and hear a Hesped on Yom Tov Sheni if you're a Ben Chutz La'aretz and it's in Eretz Yisrael, so it's not Yom Tov for them anymore? So Rav Moshe writes that no, you're not allowed to even go hear the Hesped. The Debre Tziner and Be'er Moshe Chelik Beis Simon Reish Sadi Beis says that since only the family is going to be really overwhelmed with grief, and the family is Israeli, there's nothing wrong with the Ben Chutz La'aretz being there to hear a Hesped. Rav Moshe and Rav Moshe Yordei Chelik Beis Simon Chav Ches allows using the same dishwasher for meat and dairy, provided that you get different racks, which is not highly practical, but provided that you get different dishwashing racks, you get remote holds, you can use the same dishwasher for meat and dairy. But the Debre Tziner, it's not so clear, by the way, that he would still hold that, meaning the technology of dishwashers is ever evolving. Any tshuva that was written 20 years ago, or even as recently as 20 years ago or 10 years ago about a dishwasher, the whole metzius is different. It has to be reassessed all the time. But that's not a discussion for now. So Rav Moshe says you could use the same dishwasher for both meat and dairy. Debre Tziner and Chelek Zayin in his Kuntras Electric, Simon Samach writes, Harotze lismo chalatero yochel lahatir, avalein da'ati noche, ve'ein ani matir b'shum ofen, ulekol sheshol mimeni asarti bechleit. He says, you want to rely on Rav Moshe, you can rely on Rav Moshe, but I would never be makel on such a shayla. Rav Moshe and Yaradei Chelek Beis and Memtes, famously says that smoking cigarettes is not usur. That's a famous, very harmful tshuva of Rav Moshe, actually, meaning people, I don't know if anyone smoked because of that tshuva, but people used it as their excuse to continue smoking. And the Debre Tzina Rav says, absolutely not. But Debre Tzina writes, in Chelek Vav, Simon Kuf Samach, Hadvarim Berurim Kesimla. He says, it's clear as day. Shadavar Shanisu Rovim Harbe Ubali De Maskana Shadavar Zem Mazik L'Bnei Adam Aleinu L'Shmalem. If the doctors checked and they tested and they know that this is damaging, you have to listen to the doctors. V'asu L'Bnei Adam L'Halos Ashen Cigarette Mishum Shmartim Znaf Shoseichem. You're not allowed to smoke cigarettes. It's a violation of Shmartim Znaf Shoseichem. It used to be a pet peeve of mine. A lot of people used to complain. I would hear it a lot. Where are the rabbis? Why aren't the rabbis saying that cigarette smoking is asur? I said, well, if you don't read what the rabbis say, you can ask such a kasha. But every rabbi says cigarette smoking is asur. Meaning, anyone who wrote a tshuva other than Rav Moshe, and since Rav Moshe, let's say, anyone who wrote a tshuva on the topic, Rav Avadya and Rav Eliashiv and Rav Vosner and the Debre Tzina, they all said cigarette smoking is asur. All the rabbis said that it was asur. Rav David Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, wrote that if Rav Moshe had to write the tshuva nowadays, he would say asur also. That with what we know, what we now know, it's no longer possible to say Shomer P'sayim Hashem. Another case that they disagreed, Rav Moshe in Yoredei Chelek Beis Siminayin Hei, it talks about writing that's on two parts of a parochas. When you open the aron and the parochas splits, so Rav Moshe talks about a cheshash of kosev. If there's writing and it says Eitz Chaim Yilamach Hazikimba, then it goes apart and then you put it together. Is that a problem of kosev? So Debre Tzina thinks that in Ber Moshe Chelek Vav Simon Kuf Chav Hei, that it's not even a shayla, it's for sure mutter, that there's nothing to talk about. So again, he has certain kulas, a lot of things that he's even more makil than Rav Moshe. But the one I wanted to talk about for the few minutes that we have left is wearing yarmulkes at work. I don't know why I chose this one, but I think it's sort of, you get to see the style of the Debre Tzina Rav through this tshuva, because you see his Hungarian personality really shine through. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Or Chaim Chelek. Oh, also, this is interesting, because even though Debre Tzina quotes Rav Moshe on almost every page, and all of his tshuvas that he argues, he's always quoting Rav Moshe, over here, he's clearly dealing with the same issue that Rav Moshe probably was the same Shoel even, and he doesn't even quote Rav Moshe. It's surprising. He doesn't quote Rav Moshe on the this tshuva. But anyway, in Or Chaim Chelek Dalet Siman Beis in Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe was asked by somebody who needed to get a job, and the job offer he got demanded that he not wear a yarmulke, that he couldn't wear a yarmulke at the office. So is he allowed to take a job at an office where he's not going to be allowed to wear a yarmulke? I remember my uncle Julius Berman told me that when he started working at Kay Scholer, which is a major law firm, so he was the first frum person hired by Kay Scholer. Now, if you work there, chances are you have smicha. But it used to be they weren't hiring frum people. So he was the first frum person that was hired there. And he told him, Rav Soloveitchik told him, do not wear a yarmulke. That it's going to be it's a big chiddush that they hired you, that they were willing to hire. Rav Soloveitchik happened to know one of the partners there, and said he had two students that he said you can absolutely trust. These lawyers are going to give you a lot of nachas. They're going to bring in a lot of business, and it was true. They both did very, very well, but. But anyway, so he told him not to wear a yarmulke. After he brought in the Reichman account, he was okay to wear a yarmulke. Then he could do whatever he wanted. Then he had a mincha minyan in his office and everything else. But Rav Moshe was asked, are you allowed to take such a job? So Rav Moshe, this is interesting, because Rav Moshe's very first tshuva in all of Igros Moshe is really about wearing a yarmulke. So he goes back, that's what one of the complaints that the Satmars had against Rav Moshe is, your very first tshuva is that a small yarmulke is okay? Meaning the very first tshuva is already going to be like such a kula that it's okay to wear a small yarmulke. Why can't at least, so to Rav Moshe, what do you mean? Torah is Torah. If that's the halacha, why would it be any different than the first tshuva, the second tshuva, the tenth tshuva? But Rav Moshe goes back to a lot of those discussions from the very first tshuva in Igros Moshe, and he writes, Ladina de Gemara, and according to most shittos, going without a yarmulke is really only a midas chasidus. And he says maybe even saying Shem Hashem with Gilui Arosh, Truma Sadeshin writes in Siman Reish Gimel that it's not an Isser Mefurash necessarily, and therefore, even though this is clearly a minhag Yisrael that all of Klal Yisrael accepted, that men wear a yarmulke on their head, he says, when it comes to a minhag Yisrael, you don't have to give up An exorbitant amount of money. And he says, Hasagas Mishrul Parnasasa, who have said Gadol Yosef Michomesh. To give up a job opportunity is giving up your entire Parnasa. And you don't have to give that up for the sake of a minag. Aye, but there's a shita of the Taz that says that going Begilia Rosh is a violation of Chukas Ha'akum, because in the religious Gentiles used to be very careful to dafka go Begilia Rosh. So to go with an uncovered head is a violation of Chukas Ha'akum. That's a lo sase. That's not just a minag, says Rav Moshe. That's not true anymore. He says that nowadays there's no one that doesn't wear a hat for religious reasons, meaning they just don't wear a hat because it's uncomfortable. But it's not a religious thing that people don't wear a hat anymore. So he says, therefore, it's no longer considered a chukas akum, and therefore even the Taz would agree nowadays. Lukuli alma hu raksi hirus mitzada minag hatov hakadosh shalanu shelo chamer ze ma'isa shef sid mamanu onus. That's what Moshe says, it's hefsid mamun, you're allowed to do it. Comes along Deborah Tzina Rav, in Chelech Ches, Simen Mem, and he says, in his brief summary of the tshuva, Heshafti al pi halacha yesh makom lahatir, avlat sasi, shebevadai lo lekabel mishrazu, ki gile rosh margila la adam lekalus rosh lef kerus. He says, it could be that it's mutter, but no way should you take such a job, and you should trust Hashem will find you parnasa somewhere else, because when you go without a yarmulke, you're going to end up doing a lot more terrible things. And he goes through the whole sugya, the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Aleph, that tells us that Rav Hun Breder of Yeshua wouldn't go Dalet Amos with Kilei Arosh, and the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Ches, that he said, Tesili Delos Hagina Dalet Amos with Kilei Arosh, that I deserve credit because I don't go Dalet Amos with my head uncovered. And the Beis Yosef writes that Tesili means that it's only Amidas Chasidus, and Rav Shlomo Kluger and Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo is Mechadesh that if you expose your entire head, that's Asr Min Adin, but if you expose only part of your head, that's only Asr Mitam Minag, and he goes through the Taz, that Rav Moshe quotes, that it's Chukas Ha'akum, and then he says, Rav Moshe Svara, he says, you know what, maybe that Taz doesn't apply nowadays, because Shagoyim Ba'atzvam Ruba Deruba Einam Ha'amim B'chukoseyim Shalmei Oz, they're not practicing that same concern, a religious concern of Dafka uncovering their head, so nowadays, maybe really is only a minag. But he said, I heard from my father, in the name of the Chasam Sofer Zuchusa Yagen Aleinu. Bezal Lashon, he quotes it in Yiddish, but I'll just read the Hebrew translation. Haholich Begili Arosh, Eino Meshukatz Lufish Haholich Begili Arosh. He says, a person who goes without a yarmulke, he's not a bad guy because he goes without a yarmulke, but he goes without a yarmulke because he's a bad guy. Meaning, it's not that not wearing yarmulke is such a terrible aveira, but only people who are such avaryanim would be willing to not wear a yarmulke in the first place. And he takes that as like the basis of his psak, meaning that line, that it says something about you when you don't wear a yarmulke. And then he records an episode that happened in his Beis Din, and he says that there was an issue between a husband and a wife. They were getting divorced, and they were fighting over everything, as often happens. It was a Din Torah ish v'ishto, and he says, what kind of people were these? Me'akas ha'mischadshim, avol shomer Shabbos v'taras ha'mishpacha, avol belavach ichayem kechayech me'artzos abristam. He say, basically, he's talking about modern Orthodox people. He says that people who dressed like Americans, they dress like Americans. They're shomer Shabbos, but they dress like Americans. And he says, and I saw the way they dressed was such pritzos, and they're in the middle of fighting with each other and yelling at each other and shooting fire at each other, and then. Then the woman says, you know, there's something I'm afraid to even tell you, but I just have to, I have to tell you just so you understand how bad my husband is. She said, after dinner, he sits down in his lounge chair, he takes out his newspaper, and he takes off his yarmulke when he reads the newspaper. And the husband, says the Deborah Tzina Rav, turned white. He couldn't believe that she said that. And he said, she's right, I'm such an awful person, I take off my yarmulke, and she's right about everything. And they made shalom right there in the Beis Din. It's such a strange story. But he said, his point is saying that even people who are so removed from my intensity of Torah and mitzvos, a yarmulke was everything. To take off a yarmulke, who would do that? Take that to them, that was the worst. And therefore, says the Deborah Tzina, often. Ain't any maskim. Umimeni lo yetzei hora lahatir. You're not going to get a heter from me to do this, to go to take a job without a yarmulke. And then he puts a P.S. at the end of the tshuva. He says, by the way, I got a short while later, I got a phone call from the person that I was machmir that he couldn't take the job. That his wife, he explained what I said to his wife, and she agreed that he should not take the job. And then a short while later, he got a better job offer where he's allowed to wear his yarmulke, so everything worked out Litova. So you see that I had siyata d'shmaya in passing this. Why did I pick this tshuva? Rav Moshe Lahalach is clearly right, right? Meaning, but this is the Hungarian style. This is a different style of Shailin Tshuva, and I think this helps express a little bit of the Deborah Tziner's style in Psak Halach on social issues. When it comes to more halachic issues, you do find that he is much more makel. So with that, I wish everyone a wonderful day.